96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. D.C. is always a very busy place when it comes to politics and civic issues, and recently is no exception. We've invited D.C. Council Chairman Phil Mendelson to talk about a variety of issues with us and you. Chairman Mendelson joins me in studio now. And if you have questions or comments about what's going on in the District of Columbia, you are invited to call us at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. Outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876, 855-288-4876. Mr. Chairman, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Good evening.
Let's talk, first of all, about some topical issues, some things that have really kind of come up very, very recently. You know, obviously, Interim Chief Eugene Jones of the D.C. Fire Department expressed some consternation today about accepting the punishment for the firefighters involved in the case regarding Cecil Mills. Of course, Cecil Mills died after having a heart attack in front of a D.C. fire station. Your thoughts about the punishment of these firefighters, and as well as the lieutenant who was allowed to retire?
Well, I know that folks are unhappy with the punishment that was announced today. I think the one of the concerns I have is the lieutenant who was allowed to retire and get full benefits. And my understanding of the situation was that the lieutenant was more culpable than anybody else in the firehouse and was responsible for the firehouse. You know, the bottom line is that the public has a right to expect that first responders are going to respond immediately when there's an emergency. Immediately. And if you have that emergency, if you have a heart attack across the street from a firehouse, that the firefighters aren't going to stand around inside and you end up getting an ambulance from half a mile or a mile away. That's just not what we expect, and that's not what ought to happen. I don't want to comment on the individual cases, and I don't really know the details well enough with regard to some of the individuals. I do think it's important that a message was sent, and that message was that if we don't respond, if the first responders do not respond right away, that there are going to be consequences. There will be sanctions.
You probably remember that during this process that the disciplinary board, as it examined these issues, kicked out the public.
Yeah, I think that was wrong.
Kick out the media. You think so?
Oh, yeah. I think it just, if not, it invites trouble. It just invites trouble. You know, I see this all the time in the legislative world that I'm in, and of course everything we do is public, but if there's ever any sense that something's secret, then people start to get upset, even if there's nothing to get upset about. It just invites trouble, and that's, the board should have, its deliberations, its hearing should have been public, and to close the door just made everybody more upset.
The Park Southern Apartments, it's reportedly raided by the IRS last week, records taken stretching back to, I believe, 2008. This huge apartment complex has had a somewhat notorious reputation as it relates to, you know, the care of the facility and the way that the tenants there have been treated. Should there be more actions from the district on this outside of, you know, the removal of the management company?
I think there's a lot more to learn. And with the Inspector General's looking into this, and as you mentioned, the IRS is now looking into this. My understanding is that the D.C. Attorney General's looking into this. There are a couple of issues involved here. One of them, and this is in some ways the most important issue, is that that apartment building is a major supply of affordable housing. I mean, there are a lot of units in that building, and we don't want to lose those affordable units. And we also don't want to jeopardize the lives of the tenants who are in that building. That's just not what it should be about. That's one issue. And then the other is, has there been something inappropriate, particularly with regard to the finances. And that's a separate issue, and that also needs to be looked at very aggressively.
Mm. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876, 855-288-4876. Brian, calling from Northeast Washington, quickly, what's on your mind?
Yes, I want to comment on the trafficking here in D.C. on the weekends with construction. A couple of weekends, we travel around the city. You got construction going on in just about every other block. It just costs haywire. And I'm wondering, who is putting this plan together? Are they looking at people who are trying to get to where they need to go to? Isn't it more money to spend to work on the weekend? I came into the district, and I thought I was at a Sprite convention because every other block had those light green jackets out there.
Let me see if the chairman can address your issue briefly, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I think what Brian's asking about is sounds like private sector development, and if they want to pay the overtime for Saturday work, that's their expense. Of course, the city does issue permits if it involves closing lanes, or the city should be out there with its inspectors shutting down these construction sites if they are taking up closing lanes without permits. If it's because of road work, sometimes I think the DDOT, I get caught in some of these traffic jams and it's pretty frustrating. And sometimes I think DDOT could coordinate a little bit better and ought to. They probably think they're doing a pretty good job. You know, the bottom line is it would be nice for us to do everything we can, and when I say us, I mean the government, to minimize the inconvenience to motorists, which if, at a minimum would include notifying, giving us a notice a few blocks in advance that things are going to be shut down.
Okay, thank you so much, Brian, for your phone call. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more of the conversation with D.C. Council Chairman Phil Mendelson. The lines remain open at 202-319-7810. Outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 and WHUR. I'm Harold Fisher. My guest is D.C. Council Chairman Phil Mendelson. We're talking about a variety of issues here in Washington, D.C. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Outside of the D.C. calling area, 855-288-4876, 855-288-4876. Here's another issue that has been in the news lately, and it's really kind of a strange situation, and I'm sure you've heard about it, about a red light camera that was a DC red light camera, but it was actually over the line in the state of Maryland, and some people were getting tickets. We haven't heard much about the police other than the fact that they've removed it. What happens to the tickets that were issued to the people who were snagged by this camera?
Well, I think the city ought to go ahead and on its own void those tickets if it felt the, it seems to have acquiesced in the reality that it was improper to put a DC camera in the state of Maryland. And so sometimes I think that traffic adjudication doesn't think about the customer, which is the person who's getting these tickets. And instead of putting them through all these hoops, make it easier. We don't need all these tickets to survive. And there's enough violations, legitimate violations, that let's focus on those rather than defending that which is difficult to defend.
Now, you said you believe that those tickets should be voided, but do you have any idea what would happen if one of those drivers who received a ticket went to the Department of Motor Vehicles here in Washington to get it addressed? I mean,
it's been a couple of years since I've been down at traffic adjudication, but it's a
lucky
long,
you.
It's a long line, and then you something like this, after you've waited a while, then you get before the hearing examiner, the case is dismissed.
Mm. Let us hope so. One other brief issue that I want to at least start before I go to a break, and we will address this before. As you very well know, the handgun issue here in the district has started up again. And right now we are in the midst of a 90-day stay. where do we go during this 90-day stay? When I say we, I'm talking about the District of Columbia.
Well, I personally think that we should be pursuing a two-pronged strategy. The first prong is that we need to I believe what the D.C. Attorney General is doing is moving to, for reconsideration. If that does not result in any change in the decision, that then we go to the Court of Appeals. The order that was issued was overly broad, in my view. Maybe I shouldn't say overly. It was extraordinarily broad. It just simply enjoined the enforcement of the carrying statute. This is a carrying statute that dates back to the early 1930s. And, I mean, there's no question in my mind that we are never going to allow somebody who does not qualify to have a registered firearm to carry a firearm. If you don't qualify to own a firearm, then how can you qualify to carry? And yet the order makes no distinction between those who are good guys and those who are bad guys. So we, in the meantime, we ought to be looking at changes to the statute to resolve some of the issues that the court was most concerned about, namely that there was an absolute prohibition on license.
We're going to continue this conversation about guns in D.C. and other issues in the District of Columbia. So if you're on the line, stay with me. Dave, Mike, Eric, Deborah, Doretha, stay on the line. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. Jeff Brown is next with The Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation on Sirius XM in just a few seconds.